I am like a Real Housewives free zone.
I watch them all.
Do you really?
Yeah.
We should have invested in false eyelashes. We could retire.
I know, right?
President Biden is in Europe this morning. Ukraine's plea to join NATO dominates the trip. The president remains skeptical of the idea, at least for now.
Holding NATO together is really critical.
Will the military alliance give Ukraine a path to membership?
I'm Michelle Martin. That's A. Martinez. And this is Up First from NPR News. Five prominent Ukrainian military commanders return home after they were held as prisoners of war. They received a hero's welcome and now plan to return to the fight.
And transgender youth can no longer receive gender-affirming care in Tennessee. How will the ban impact young people uncomfortable with their assigned gender at birth?
I was definitely just depressed before I went on estrogen, especially before puberty blockers.
Stay with us. We've got all the news you need to start your day.
Support for NPR and the following message come from GoodRx. Did you know that GoodRx can help you save money and better manage your health this summer? With GoodRx, you can find big savings at the pharmacy for your medications. GoodRx lets you compare prescription prices at over 70,000 pharmacies and instantly find discounts of up to 80%. And even if you have insurance or Medicare, GoodRx could beat your copay price. So for simple, smart savings on your prescriptions this summer, go to goodrx.com/upfirst.
President Biden is in Europe this week with a mission to shore up America's ties and discuss potentially expanding NATO membership at a two-day leaders' summit in Lithuania.
But he begins his trip this morning in the United Kingdom, meeting British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and talking climate change with King Charles at Windsor Castle.
NPR White House correspondent Asma Khalid joins us now from London. The NATO summit is really the focus of this trip to Europe. What will be the top priority?
Well, Ukraine is going to be the top priority. Biden has staked a lot of his personal reputation on uniting NATO in the face of Russian aggression. But one big test for this idea of NATO unity when this summit does get underway tomorrow in Lithuania will be around this question of Ukraine's membership into the club. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has called on Biden to invite Ukraine into NATO now, but Biden has resisted that push. The president spoke with CNN's Fareed Zakaria before he left for this trip to Europe. And Biden flatly said Ukraine is not ready for NATO membership.
Holding NATO together is really critical. I don't think there is unanimity in NATO about whether or not to bring Ukraine into the NATO family now, at this moment, in the middle of a war.
And that's because bringing Ukraine in now would require other NATO countries to join that war effort. You know, so Biden says it would be premature to call for a vote now when Ukraine, though, I will say, would like to see at least a clear path to membership when the leaders get together this week.
Yeah. So then what would even be the conditions for Ukraine to join? I mean, has the White House spelled that out?
No. And the White House has said it will uphold NATO's open door policy, which means in theory, Ukraine could join the club one day, but it's not articulated a timeline. Biden told CNN he thinks they have to lay out a, quote, rational path for Ukraine to get into NATO. And he said that'll require some democratic reform. So, you know, it'll take some time to get into NATO. But Biden did tell CNN that in the meantime, if there is a ceasefire in this war, the U.S. will be ready to provide security guarantees to Ukraine, akin to what it does for Israel, providing weapons capacity for the country to defend itself. Of course, you know, that would require the approval of Congress, and there is the risk that this all could further anger the Kremlin.
Sure. Now, it's not just Ukraine's membership that's raised questions about NATO unity. Tell us, Asma, about what's going on with Sweden.
That's right. You know, you probably recall after Russia invaded Ukraine, both Finland and Sweden applied to join NATO. It's now been over a year, and Finland joined the group a few months ago. But Sweden's membership bid has been held up, and really the main opposition is Turkey. Turkey feels that Sweden is not doing enough to crack down on groups that it views as terrorists. But really, experts tell me that this holdup is not just about Sweden. Turkey sees Sweden's membership as a moment of leverage, specifically around obtaining F-16 fighter jets from the United States. And on the flight over to Europe yesterday, Biden spoke with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan about Sweden's membership and this issue of the F-16. The two leaders are also expected to talk more on the sidelines of the NATO summit. Biden has said he is optimistic Sweden will join NATO, but it's still not clear when exactly that might happen.
That's NPR's Asma Khalid on the streets of London. Asma, thanks a lot.
Good talking with you.
All right, so now we're going to get the view on the NATO summit from Ukraine.
The prospect of Ukraine joining the alliance actually first came up in 2008. 15 years later, it's still under discussion.
Here to tell us more, we're joined by NPR's Greg Myrie in Kyiv, Ukraine. Greg, if Ukraine can't get membership at this NATO summit, and you heard President Biden say that it's premature maybe for even a vote to happen, so what does it hope it can get?
Well, the next best option from Ukraine's perspective would be a clear timetable toward membership. President Volodymyr Zelensky said in an interview that aired over the weekend that Ukraine should get clear security guarantees, which President Biden seems to agree with, although we don't know exactly what those are. And many Ukrainians just feel they've been in limbo since the possibility of joining NATO was first broached back in 2008. Ukraine wants the question resolved sooner rather than later. They say this fuzzy middle ground has encouraged Russian leader Vladimir Putin to invade. He knew it would be too late to act if he waited until Ukraine actually joined NATO. And lastly, I just note that President George W. Bush, who raised the idea of Ukraine and NATO, faced some pushback from Europe. And now some European countries, particularly Eastern European countries, support Ukraine and NATO, while President Biden is urging caution and saying this will take time.
And Zelensky visited a few NATO countries recently, including Turkey, and then he returned home with several prominent Ukrainian military commanders. Who are they?
Yeah, this was a real surprise. These five military commanders were key figures last year in the Azovstal steel plant in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol. You may recall that they held out for more than 2 months before they finally surrendered to Russia. And the Russians then sent them to Turkey in September. And part of the deal was that they were supposed to remain in Turkey until the end of the war. But Turkey's President Erdogan handed the five commanders over to Zelensky during his visit Saturday. Russia is very angry about this, saying Turkey just reneged on the deal. Meanwhile, this was a real gift to Zelensky and Ukraine. The five commanders got a hero's welcome in Ukraine, and they say they will soon return to the fight.
Now, Zelensky also made a highly symbolic visit to Snake Island off Ukraine's coast. Why was he even there?
Zelensky took this very bold trip in a small inflatable boat to Snake Island, which is in the Black Sea, about 20 miles off Ukraine's southwest coast. And I say bold because Russia's navy controls the Black Sea. Ukraine has no warships, no real naval presence to speak of, no clear way they could have protected him. And you may remember, this is the island where a Russian warship arrived at the beginning of the war and told the small Ukrainian force there to surrender. One Ukrainian responded with a memorable burst of profanity, which has now been memorialized on billboards, T-shirts, and coffee mugs all over Ukraine. The island is now back in Ukrainian control. And while he was on the island, Zelensky laid flowers, took a selfie, and said this showed Ukraine would reclaim all the territory. And I'll just note finally that Russian ships keep their distance to avoid getting hit by the Ukrainian forces on the mainland. Still, it was a pretty dicey trip, even for Zelensky, who periodically visits the frontline areas.
NPR's Greg Myrie is in Kyiv, Ukraine. Thanks for the reporting, Greg.
Sure thing, eh?
Transgender youth in Tennessee can no longer access gender-affirming care.
A U.S. appeals court allowed a ban to take effect on surgical and non-surgical care that helps people transition toward their self-identified gender. The ruling, which came over the weekend, overturned a lower court decision to suspend the bill, which was signed into law in March.
Joining us now is Mariana Bacchiao of member station WPLN. So first off, what's the significance of this ruling?
There's a sense that this ruling could bring this issue closer to the Supreme Court. It's the first time a federal court has allowed a ban on gender-affirming care to take effect. Other states like Alabama, Arkansas, Indiana, Kentucky, and Florida have passed similar laws, banning trans kids from accessing care like hormone therapy and puberty blockers. And like Tennessee, federal judges in these states temporarily block the bans while families and advocacy groups challenge them in court. But Tennessee's attorney general appealed to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which sided with him. The ban went into effect immediately.
And how did that court explain its opinion?
It was a 2-1 decision. The court's opinion, written by Chief Judge Jeffrey Sutton, cites the Dobbs decision, which ended the federal right to abortion. The court's majority argues that both issues should be left up to the states. The opinion said the court saw no proof that gender-affirming care is, quote, deeply rooted in our history and traditions. The court also concluded that the law likely does not discriminate on the basis of sex because of another Dobbs precedent, which posits that it's not discrimination if the medical procedure only applies to one sex. There was one dissenting opinion. Judge Helene White wrote that the law likely does discriminate based on sex. She points out that the law does make some exceptions. It allows hormone therapy for cisgender and intersex kids, just not for transgender kids.
Okay, now tell us about the plaintiffs.
I spoke with LW. She's a 15-year-old transgender girl and the named plaintiff in this lawsuit. We're just using her initials because she's afraid of being targeted. She started taking estrogen in the fall after being on puberty blockers. She says it really helped her mental health.
I was definitely very just depressed before I went on estrogen, especially before puberty blockers, because I really just, like, wasn't myself. And it was just sort of difficult to care about everything around me.
Her parents, Brian and Samantha Williams, say they've also seen a huge change in her. They say she wasn't really engaging with her peers or family before.
Or even with us, like, she wouldn't make eye contact often.
She wouldn't hug you.
She wouldn't hug you. And we didn't know, you know, we had no idea why that was until after. And then now she's very affectionate with us.
A lot of parents of trans kids that I've spoken with echoed that sentiment.
So what's in the short term for this law and also this family?
So this ruling is temporary. The courts have until the end of September to decide whether the law will stay in effect while the lawsuit continues. But still, the Williams family is devastated. In the meantime, they're having to look to other states to get care. Here's Elle's mom again.
The two states where we were looking to go for care, if the injunction wasn't granted, now have bills of their own, which means we'd have to go even further.
The family is working to find ways for Elle to continue taking estrogen. Without this care, she says she's not able to enjoy life.
That's Mariana Bacchiao of member station WPLN. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's Up First for Monday, July 10th. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Up First is produced by Nina Kravinsky, Shelby Hawkins, and Katie Klein. Our editors are Olivia Hampton and Alice Wolfley. Our technical director is Carly Strange, with engineering support from Arthur Laurent. Start your day here with us tomorrow.
And thanks for listening to Up First. You can find more in-depth coverage of the stories we talked about today and a lot more on NPR's Morning Edition. That's the radio show Michelle Martin, Leila Fadel, Steve Inskeep, and I host. And you can find Morning Edition and your NPR station at stations.npr.org.